About the Sky here on KALX Berkeley. My name is Gregor Sharpin. I'm going to be your host for the next hour. The first Saturday of the month, as is the usual ritual, is reserved for a musician spotlight. And we have with us in the studio today Brianna Connery, who is going to be performing an all-women composer piano show over at the Freight and Salvage coming up on Thursday, September 12th. Thank you so much for relinquishing part of your weekend to come in to talk with us today.
Thanks so much for having me, Greg. It's great to be here.
I guess maybe just to sort of set the stage, let's talk about what the show is and kind of the origin story of the selection that you've chosen for the show.
Sure, absolutely. So I'm afraid we have to go back to the dark days of COVID for just a moment, but I promise we won't stay there long. About a year into the COVID lockdowns, I turned 40, and I started thinking a lot about my life and what I was doing, and especially what I was saying with my music and what I wanted to say in the future. And I realized that at age 40, despite a lifetime of studying the piano, I'd never once learned a solo piano piece written by a woman composer. Which I think it's not that unusual, unfortunately, especially for classically trained pianists. And so basically, I got really interested in finding out what was out there in terms of women composers and also really in thinking about and trying to find and see how far back could I go kind of in history and find composers who wrote for the piano or for the harpsichord.
I was about to say the piano or a
keyboard. Or its ancestors, yes. Exactly. That could still be performed on a modern piano. And I found just some really inspiring and beautiful music and also really inspiring and beautiful stories of these women who composed this music. Basically put together this show, which is kind of a combination of talking about the stories of these women composers and playing, you know, selections of their music.
What, in sort of coming across the stories, did you, was the initial idea just like, I want to find the pieces, and then the story sort of emerged out of that, or... at what point did you realize, oh, I have a lot of stories here?
Right. That's a great question. It's really a little bit of both. Certainly going really far back, there aren't that many women who I could find in my research anyway who wrote something that could really be played on a modern piano and that was written just for solo keyboard instrument.
Not a piano concerto or...
Yeah, correct, yeah. Exactly. So that was somewhat constrained. But then, my goal really was to find music that I loved. And I didn't want to just find, you know, music that was written by a woman and so I'm going to play it. It's music
right.
That's really spoke to me. So mm-hmm. That was the main thing. And then also... But I did come across some really amazing stories along the way that just kind of inspired me to find a piece by that woman composer who, that I felt really that I wanted to share because I wanted to share both the story and the music. So.
Were there pieces written for harpsichord or pre-harpsichord that were just could not be translated to a modern piano? This is a great piece, but there's no way for me to be able to render it on this particular instrument.
Yeah, another great question. So, I would say actually, so one of the composers that I do feature one of her pieces, Elisabeth Claude Jacquet de la Guerre, she was a French composer in the Baroque era, so sort of the time of Bach. And this was kind of like, you know, late 1600s, early 1700s. She was actually a composer in the court of King Louis XIV, the Sun King of France. And she wrote prolifically, and she actually published quite a lot of her work for harpsichord. She was known as a brilliant improviser at the harpsichord. And some of her pieces actually essentially transcribe an improvisation on the harpsichord. And I have tried to make sense of them on the piano because they're amazing. But with my skills anyway, I haven't been able to figure out how to present those. But I have enjoyed playing them and listening certainly to recordings of them. So
I had a chance to talk with a composer recently, within the last 5 or 6 years, about the idea of improvisation. And that, people think of improvisation as being sort of a new idea and that... Actually, no, the idea of like strictly adhering to something as written is actually the newer idea.
Absolutely. Yeah. It's actually very interesting reading about, both male and female composers going way back, just many of them were brilliant improvisers, and some of them didn't really like writing down their music.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So let's maybe talk about some of the stories then. I mean, what was the first story that you encountered, which kind of gave you a sense of, oh, I have more than just a series of pieces to play. I actually have text that I can put in here.
Absolutely. I would say the first story that just really grabbed me was about Mariana Martinez. So she's sort of an early classic period composer, sort of late 1700s, early 1800s, sort of the time of Mozart and Haydn and getting toward Beethoven as well. And so she grew up in Vienna. Her father was the chief of staff to the papal embassy in Vienna, and she kind of grew up in this household. She got educated by this itinerant Italian poet named Metastasio, who was her father's friend, and he kind of took this interest in her education. He was sort of living with her family, and basically ended up finding her for her harpsichord tutor. He found her this struggling composer who lived in the attic apartment of their house, and it turned out it was Joseph Haydn. And so, yeah, so he taught Mariana Martinez the harpsichord for several years in exchange for free room and board at their house. And she was, Mariana Martinez was this child prodigy, and she performed for the imperial court. And she was she had a bunch of honors sort of in her lifetime. But she also, she ran these salons, as she.
Right. Yes.
Yeah.
Yes.
And she actually, Mozart was actually a frequent guest at her salons. And so they used to play duets together at the piano. And I just couldn't believe I had never heard of her, right? With all these connections to, you know, very famous
names that we do know.
Names, yeah, mm-hmm. Yeah, exactly. And her music is really very engaging, I would say.
One question that comes up for me in thinking about this, or kind of hearing some of the stories that you're talking about, mm-hmm. is, I mean, were the idea of whether they were sort of just written out of history, or whether, I mean, how prominent they were in their own lifetimes, and
right.
then why they didn't, you know, you would think that if there was, you know, misogyny or inherent sexism, that they wouldn't have even had the chance to be in the levels of society that they were, and
right.
yet, so that sort of that disparity is interesting to me.
It's very interesting, and certainly, I mean, I think it's, you know, a longer conversation than we could just have right now. But I think just sort of looking at it in really general terms, when you go really far back, you kind of have these two groups of women composers. So one group essentially learned music as a trade. So they grew up in families of musicians, and a lot of times they got, you know, musical training growing up, and they were able to practice professionally as musicians and as composers. And in a lot of cases, those women did gain quite a bit of professional public recognition during their lifetimes. But then there were also a number of women who were much more, they maybe belonged to sort of like upper class families, wealthier families that could afford sort of any kind of...
Could afford salons.
Could afford salons, exactly. And so they also a lot of times had really excellent musical educations, but a lot of times their performance or their, you know, the ways they shared their music really were in the domestic sphere and in salons and things like that. And a lot of times, they would just give away their music. You know, they would write something and give it away to a friend. And, you know, basically it's like who got to publish their music was a big, big deal.
Mm.
So for example, Fanny Mendelssohn Hensel, the sister of Felix Mendelssohn, right? We now know she composed more than 450 works in her lifetime, but she only published just a tiny, tiny fraction of that because there were a lot of, societal kind of obstacles to her publishing her work, just kind of given her family's social standing and things.
And we have one Mendelssohn. We'll go for this one and not.
Yeah, exactly.
Well, it's also, I mean, there's another interesting dichotomy where you're talking about, you know, composers and performers, and those two
yes.
things are not necessarily the same thing. So you have people who, you know, were probably fantastic players but never actually composed anything. So someone who was a performer and a composer.
Right. Well, and I mean, the further back you go, I mean, composing was certainly kind of an expected part of the training of any performer.
Going back to improvisation in a way.
Exactly, mm-hmm. exactly. But, you know, some performers were better at composing than others, right? Clara Schumann is like a really interesting example, related to what you're talking about. So she had a performing career that spanned more than six decades. I mean, she was performing in public for basically the entire Romantic era of music, most of the 1800s. And she did compose, and she was well regarded as a composer. She would even perform some of her compositions, but she didn't compose a lot compared to how much she performed, mm-hmm. right? And so her life as a performer, for many, many reasons, took precedence over her life as a composer.
You'd mentioned the idea of child prodigy, which I know you said sort of pops up a lot in this particular program.
It does.
But is it Amy Beach, I think, was the one who was like the extreme outlier in that regard?
Right. At that point in the program, I'll usually say something like, you must be tired of hearing about child prodigies by this point. Good news, Amy Beach was an infant prodigy. So Amy Beach, an American composer in late 1800s, early 1900s, she basically, by the age of one, she could hum 40 songs in the original key she had heard them in. And then when she was two or three, she would harmonize with her mother when her mother would sing her lullabies at night. And it's just like remarkable musical talent.
Talk a little bit more about her and about the sort of, I mean, the mm-hmm. the my familiarity with her biography kind of ends at that. So beyond the age of two.
Beyond the age of two. Right, exactly. So her family relocated from New Hampshire to Boston when she was about eight, and she basically was the darling of the Boston musical scene from that point forward. She was composing, she was taking, she was performing. She made her debut with the Boston Symphony Orchestra when she was 16. And she toured for a little bit after that. And then she actually got married at age 18 to a famous doctor, surgeon, who was 24 years older than her. He basically was a huge supporter of her music in many ways, but he didn't want her performing. He only really wanted to support her composition. And basically she ended up focusing completely on composing at that point. She was very, very successful during her lifetime as a composer. She was the first woman to have a symphony premiered by an American symphony orchestra, or even played by an American symphony orchestra. Her Gaelic symphony was premiered by the Boston Symphony Orchestra in the 1890s. And she actually wrote this song. This is one of my favorite bits of trivia about her. She wrote a song called Ecstasy. I believe it was 1892 or so. And it was so popular, she used the royalties to build herself a cottage on Cape Cod. So she basically was quite popular. And she, after her husband passed away, she ended up basically teaching and performing and just traveling the world. And she loved mentoring, other musicians, especially women. And she had a really big influence, I think, as a teacher as well as, as a performer and composer.
As a performer, was she a pianist or was she?
She was primarily a pianist. Okay. Yeah. She also loved writing for voice, but I think she primarily performed as a pianist.
I was going to have the first piece that we heard be a Florence Price piece, but since we're talking about Amy Beach, I think we might have to go for this one. Do you want to talk? This is Sketches, Opus 15, number 3?
Yeah, absolutely. This one is called Dreaming, and this set of sketches, it's like four short pieces. Each has each is sort of inscribed with a line of French poetry. This one has a line from Victor Hugo. I'm going to butcher my French, but please excuse me. Tu me parles du fond d'un rêve. So you speak to me from the depths of a dream.
Non, normally.
Thank you. it's sort of, if you want to think about a piece of romantic piano music, this is like the epitome of romanticism. It's, extremely chromatic and very passionate and has this great melody and big dynamic range and all these sorts of things. And it's very beautiful. It's like, it's romantic almost to the point of being sentimental and all that, but I love it anyway. I think it's gorgeous.
So this is a composition by Amy Beach as performed by Priyana Konri. Here for you, on KALX Berkeley. Thank you. two pieces as performed by Brianna Connery here on 90.7 FM, KALX Berkeley, who will be doing these pieces and many, many more at the Freight and Salvage coming up on Thursday the 12th. That piece by Lily Boulanger, I'll let you deal with the French on that one.
Oh, thanks, Greg. Yeah, that was from Lily Boulanger's Trois Morceaux. It's the first selection from that collection of three pieces. It's called D'un Vieux Jardin. It's from an old garden, ancient garden, maybe. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And ahead of that, we had the Amy Beach Sketches, mm-hmm. Opus 15, number 3, is that? Yes. Dreaming Help. In the program, how many of the sketches do you do?
I just do the one.
Just that one?
So, yeah, it's pretty, so the kind of typical format is it's really almost split between telling stories and music in terms of time. Mm-hmm. So it's something like, you know, 5-ish minutes talking and then 5-ish minutes playing. Mm-hmm. It's not quite exactly that, but so for Amy Beach, I just do sort of the one piece.
Mm-hmm. How did you go about selecting which pieces made it onto the program? I mean, if you have a composer who has I have 400 pieces that I can choose.
Exactly. I know. Especially like someone like Amy Beach, who wrote so much for the piano. Mm-hmm. Well, you know, I really did want to, like I said before, I definitely wanted pieces that spoke to me personally. So mm-hmm. I listened to a lot and found as many scores as I could. I mean, it can be hard to find these recordings and to find the music.
I was about to say, I mean, would you listen to the pieces or did you have to read the pieces?
Both. Uh-huh. Yeah, sometimes I had to read them.
Because there's no recordings.
Because there's no recordings, exactly. So it was a big research project and a big adventure, which was a lot of fun, I've got to say. But also sad, right? I mean, just that there aren't more recordings and it's not so easy to find the scores. But yeah, I mean, so it was really things that spoke to me, but also I was really, really interested in trying to make this program accessible to a wide audience, not just people who are only sort of classical
steeped
music.
In classical.
Steeped
yeah.
in classical. Of course, I hope that people who are steeped in classical enjoy it as well. But I like to think that a lot of people I've just found in sort of like playing for people in my house or something, people like listening to classical music, you know, and they especially like having some context around it. And so part of the idea was trying to make this program that's accessible and interesting and entertaining for people who just enjoy music and maybe enjoy history and stories and things and not just, focused on classical. So, you know, some of the selections are, you know, some of the shorter pieces, for example, that somebody composed or a selection of, you know, one of the pieces from a set of sketches or maybe two or things like that.
Well, it also kind of goes back to the idea of the salon of like, there's, mm-hmm. like a, there's an intimacy of just sitting and listening to a solo pianist, which is, that's a very particular kind of setting, I would think.
Absolutely. And it's one that I just really enjoy. I really like connecting with the audience and both through the performance as well as, you know, getting to actually talk with them. I found that I enjoy that quite a lot. One of my friends was saying it's almost like, it's not quite like doing stand-up comedy. I mean, I don't think I'm that funny, but it's a little bit, you know, it's like I have sort of the main ideas that I want to kind of talk through, but it'll kind of sort of change based on the audience. I'll kind of gauge what people are interested in responding to, and hopefully people will laugh a little. Hopefully they might even cry a little. We'll see. But yeah.
One of the things that I also was thinking about in terms of sort of the breadth of the program, mm-hmm. Being that it covers several centuries,
mm-hmm.
And I'm wondering just in the experience of doing sort of this chronological pass through
yes.
the instrument, whether, you know, I mean, you as a pianist have done things from all across the board already mm-hmm. anyways, but sort of the concentrated nature of going through the centuries, I'm wondering if there's anything that you... That was sort of a revelation about sort of the evolution of composing for the piano.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, as we already talked about a little bit, I mean, some of the early composers on the program...
Were not piano.
Yeah, they were writing for the harpsichord, which is a completely different instrument. I mean, mm-hmm. strings are plucked and they don't, sustain the same way. There were so many differences. You can hardly even, you know, list them all. It had a very different sound to it. The dynamics were a completely different story, right? The dynamic range was handled handled in a lot of different ways. Like, for example, by changing how many notes were played at the same time. Mm-hmm. So I had to do a lot with sort of finding a little bit of a different sound for those early pieces. It might be fun to listen to one of them even if we have a moment. But and then also, you know, so the textures would get kind of thicker. People would start using the pedal to sustain sound and then to kind of play with tone colors like we heard in that Boulanger. So, yeah, I think it's definitely been interesting for me to have that experience. But actually, interestingly, I mean, I think classical pianists a lot of times do put together programs that represent, you know, Baroque, classical, romantic, and contemporary, mm-hmm. which means, you know, stuff that was written probably about 100 years ago.
Right.
And so I had had that experience before, but doing it in this sort of concentrated way and in a little more fine-grained way and, you know, seeing, I think that has been an interesting experience for me. I do think that's kind of interesting for audiences, too.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I get a lot of questions about that from audience members, just about like, so was that one written for piano? I think it sounds different from the Harpsichord one. I'm like, yeah,
yep,
exactly.
Talking about sort of researching and getting to the scores, I mean, mm-hmm. were there any scores that were particularly, I mean, you know, you have the kind of the idealized idea mm-hmm. of like going through like, you know, dusty stacks to find like that one score that's like teetering at the top of a shelf somewhere.
I know,
which
right?
is not the way it usually does. But I mean, I'm wondering, were there any interesting mm-hmm. ways of like trying to track down a particular score that was like a particular sort of mystery?
Yeah, I mean, I think there were definitely some that were harder to track down than others. The Mariana Martinez Sonata that I chose was just like that, like, you know, a tiny bit harder to find than some of her other things, but I just really liked it. So, probably one of the more interesting stories about scores is actually this Fanny Mendelssohn Hensel piece, June. So as I mentioned before, she didn't publish a lot of her works. And this the larger collection that this is drawn from actually exists in two versions. So she had an original version that she actually presented to her husband as a Christmas gift. And then her husband was an artist, and the two of them worked together to make sort of this revised version where, I mean, she revised the music, but he provided these sort of sketches that kind of went with each of the pieces in the collection. Every piece in the collection is called the year. Every piece represented one of the months of the year, right? And so both the original version and the revised version were lost for like almost 150 years, basically. And only published, the first one, the original was published in 1989, I think, and the revised version was published in 1998. Yeah. And those are a little hard to find. Like, you kind of, like, have to special order the revised version, and it's, yeah.
Hard. Find a used bookseller somewhere.
Yeah, exactly. So that was a tough one to find, but definitely one of my favorites.
What were the illustrations like?
There are these beautiful sort of pencil sketches. And in fact, I got a reproduction of this manuscript, which is like one of my prized possessions, I have to tell you. But so it's pencil sketches. Each one has some poetry lines that we think maybe Fanny Mendelssohn and her husband composed or wrote one of them or both of them together. And then each piece has a different color of pastel paper that it's printed on. That they chose to represent, you know, the feeling uh-huh. of the piece. It's remarkable.
Wow.
Yeah, it's gorgeous. Really beautiful.
I'm going to have to go and find some booktellers myself.
Right.
Track that down.
Uh-huh.
I keep on putting off the Florence Price, but I think we're going to have to play the Fanny Mendelssohn now. So
maybe
the Fanny Mendelssohn, and then we'll go back to one of the earlier harpsichord pieces.
Wonderful.
So this particular piece, this is June, the Juni serenade from Das Jahr by Fanny Mendelssohn, as performed by Brianna Connery, here for you on KALX Berkeley. Thank you. the earliest piece on the program. A little bit of Brianna Connery here on 90.7 FM, KELX Berkeley. That was the... more French. Elizabeth Claude Jacquet? Mm-hmm. Delaguerre?
No,
yes.
Very good.
Yeah, the name just keeps on going. talk a little bit about that piece.
Yeah, that's a great little piece. It's called Chaconne l'Inconstante. It's written in 1687 when Bach was only 2 years old. So over 300 years ago, which is kind of remarkable. And it's kind of so Chaconne is like variations over a bass line. And l'inconstante here is probably referring to inconstant lover, because this was in the French court. So we're thinking that that's probably the context. But the way it's expressed in the music is sort of the contrasting major and minor, sections of the piece. So there's sort of this repeating refrain that's in the major key, and then these sort of variations in the minor key.
And ahead of that, we had the Fanny Mendelssohn-Hensel, the Juni, serenade from Das Jahr, the month that we've left a couple of months ago now. to reiterate the timing, Thursday the 12th is when all of these will be performed over at the Freight and Salvage. We are, of course, rapidly running out of time, but I did want to talk about Florence Price.
And
one of the things that's particularly interesting to me, which is, I think, probably the least of her biography, was her role as an organist for silent film.
Oh, my goodness. That's my favorite thing about her, too. Yeah, that's remarkable. Yeah, so she, Florence Price, was the first African-American composer, a woman composer, to really gain prominence at a national level. And so she was kind of living in the late 1800s through the first half of the 20th century. And in the 1920s, she was in Chicago. She was living in Chicago. She was part of the Black Renaissance in Chicago. She lived in sort of an artist colony apartment, and she made her living. She was a single mom to two kids, and she made her living she was teaching and composing and playing organ for silent films in the evenings. Yeah, moonlighting that way. So it's pretty cool.
before we do completely run out of time, mm-hmm. Just a little bit. I think I was hoping to play the entirety of the Fantasy Negra, but I think we'll just have to go with the opening part of that.
Oh, yeah.
So here's a little bit of Florence Price here for you on KELX Berkeley. Here on KELX Berkeley. although, I mean, the idea of her being an organist also does make me wonder if there are any organ pieces that you encountered that you were maybe considering including.
Oh, that's a good question. And I would say I didn't really look at organ pieces, but that would be an interesting
exploration. Sort of a different translation.
Yeah, exactly.
A bit of a further leap from harpsichord to piano, mm-hmm. as it is from organ to piano, but still, I wonder what what that would do to an organ piece to have it just played on a piano.
That's an excellent question. I'll have to investigate.
We'll have you come back when you figure that part out.
Sounds great. Thank you.
We have been talking with Brianna Connery, who is going to be performing over at the Freight and Salvage Piano, an all-woman show that's going to be on Thursday, September 12th at 7 p.m. Are there any other... what's sort of the rest of the trajectory of this particular program?
Well, so this started, in Santa Cruz earlier this year, and I've been kind of performing around the Bay Area, and this was going to be kind of the last big show, the culmination, but I did get invited to play at Gavilan College in October, which I'm very excited about, down in Gilroy, mm-hmm. and I'm also going to get to play this program at the end of February in Pasadena on the Caltech campus as part of kicking off Women's History Month there. So,
What is your life looking like post piano?
Oh, yeah, we'll have to see how that all goes. But yeah, I mean, I definitely am thinking about ways to share, some of the recordings and footage and just some of the stories and things after this. So, mm-hmm. I think I'll spend some time doing that. And I do have a long-term project of learning the whole of the year by Fanny Mendelssohn.
Das Jahr, yeah.
Huh? Das Jahr, yeah, exactly. So we'll see. Maybe that will be next.
For people who are interested in finding out more about you and getting on a list, perhaps, where can they go?
So, yeah, that would be great. Please visit my website. It's BriannaConnery.com, BriannaConnery.com. And you can sign up for my mailing list there. And I have a list of upcoming performances. And you can also find me on YouTube. So,
Brianna Connery, thank you so much for coming to talk with us today.
Thank you so much, Greg. It's been a pleasure.
This is KALX Berkeley, 90.7 FM. This has been the program Women Hold Up Out the Sky. Coming up in just around 6 minutes or thereabouts will be Hate Feeler to take you up until 3 o'clock in the afternoon. Women Hold Up Out the Sky will be back in 2 weeks' time, and the Musician Spotlight will be back at the beginning of October. I'm Gregory Sharpen. Many thanks for listening. Everybody out there, have a fantastic, fantastic weekend. Going to go out with a little bit of string music. I guess technically the piano is a string instrument if you get right down to it.
There you go.
But this is what people would more normally consider to be string music. Going to play a little bit of Nordic Effect. This is coming off of the release Clockworking. This is a composition by Hildur Guðnadóttir. This is the piece Two Circles. Everybody out there, take care. See you in a month.